I really like what Sanders did. I really like that he brought the conversation more to the left. I don't think that Elizabeth Warren would be looking like she just came from the Hillary Clinton slumber party.
Right, right.
In matching outfits with her on stage. Like, they seriously looked like they were going to, like, dry hump. It was true.
From First Look Media and Panoply, this is Politically Reactive. I'm Hari Kondabolu.
And I'm Debbie Kamau Bell. A show where two comedians try to make sense of politics in America.
It's like the political version of Game of Thrones. Except not like that, really. I've never seen Game of Thrones, but people seem to like it.
On today's show, we'll be talking with the legendary Kathleen Hanna.
She currently leads the band The Julie Ruin, and before that, La Tigre. And of course, in the 90s, she was fronting the band Bikini Kill, helping to create the Riot Girl punk movement. Not to mention that she's also credited as one of the founders of third wave feminism. And rather than trying to mansplain that, we'll just ask her about it. Also, she's my friend.
Clearly, her most important credit. We're going to talk to Kathleen about the current presidential election. Maybe we'll find out if she's with her or the other her or that weird governor him.
And how does she feel about feminist icons like Gloria Steinem and Madeleine Albright suggesting that women have some kind of obligation to support Hillary?
You have to help. Hillary Clinton will always be there for you. And just remember, there's a special place in hell for women who don't help each other.
We'll also be talking about our friendship.
We'll unpack all that and more on Politically Reactive.
Hey, it's been a good couple of shows come out. The people like it. I'm not going to say I'm surprised, but I'm kind of surprised.
If only people could see the text messages I got from you over the last week or so, it's very clear that you're not used to success.
I was just kind of like, what? People like this? It's ranked already. It's ranked?
People are listening to a podcast I put out? What? I don't understand.
Well, because Ashok, my brother Ashok and I used to have a podcast together that was really poorly done. And it never ranked, and I just assumed that I guess I'm not good at podcasting because, you know, I just assume people will just find it. And apparently, if you promote a podcast, yes. if you
release
a lot of work into it.
If you release it regularly instead of you and Ashok's podcast, which was like every now and again.
3 to 8 months.
Just like Broken Clockwork.
Right. Well, if the production values are very high, people get very excited about things.
Yeah.
And apparently we're a very good team, or so we are told on the internet.
Yeah, which we knew already, but now people get to hear it for themselves. And we should say, we're recording this after the 4th of July, so I hope you enjoyed your holiday however you chose to spend it.
Yes, patriotism, capitalism, happy.
I was trying to steer clear of any sort of Independence Day allusions there, but you just took it right there, didn't you?
Yep.
All right. Yeah, but seriously, we are excited to hear people excited to listen to the podcast. Twitter, we've gotten some tweets about the podcast. Our favorite tweet of the week, Hari.
This is from Jen Wang at Jeniverse ABR. Listening to at W Kamau Bell and at Hari Kondabolu's hashtag politically reactive equals best remedy after dealing with privileged white geek boys. It's good. It's good.
The struggle is real.
It's good. Racism, privilege, elixir. That's what we do. It's great. By the way, if you're a privileged white geek boy listening to this, it will not fix you and turn you not into a privileged white geek boy. That takes a lot longer.
Yeah, you actually have to get boots on the ground. You can't just put earbuds in your ear.
Right. Like, oh, hey, I'm not a racist. I'll listen to this podcast with this black guy and this Indian guy, I think. It's not going to do it. It's not going to do it.
No, this is just the beginning of finding out about your privileged white geek boy status. But you got to actually get out in the world and do the work.
Read some bell hooks. My God, read some bell hooks.
When are we going to have bell hooks on?
I don't know. I'm working on it.
Okay. All right.
I'm working on it.
And also, just to be clear, we don't want to be totally biased here. There are some people out there. That joke never is not funny to me, by the way.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
I'll be doing that probably every fourth episode. But there are some people in the world who aren't excited about our podcast, and so not excited, they weren't excited about the podcast before the podcast even came out. On iTunes, we had 7, count them, 7 one-star reviews of our podcast when all that was up was like a minute of the teaser.
our reputation really preceded it.
Exactly. So
that is impressive. Had barely said a word already. This is gonna suck.
This is already the worst.
This is the. I don't get it. It's like there's nothing there yet. Yeah.
I know I've never liked these guys, so I know I'm never going to like them. So I would just like to make it known that I still don't like them, even though I haven't heard this project yet. Maybe it's going to be different.
Most of them have no idea who we are. Yeah. It's like, I don't like the look of that black guy and whatever that is. That sounds about right. That's consistent.
And today we're going to have a person on the podcast who knows a lot about being a firebrand for hatred. We have Kathleen Hanna.
Oh, so great. Kathleen Hanna is a punk icon, a very famous third-wave feminist. There's a movie about her called The Punk Singer, which is incredible. If you haven't seen it, please see it. She's really modest in this interview, but really, she influenced a whole generation of musicians and artists, and we're so lucky to have her on this show.
Yes, she's incredible, and she has a new album coming out with her band, The Julie Ruin, called Hit Reset. It comes out July 8th, so go pick it up digitally or in the real world. However you get it, just get it. She's a legend.
Let's welcome Kathleen Hanna.
Yeah, I don't know what's happening with the sound, because it's like, you know how it just popped in that one time?
I can hear W. Kamau Bell talking to himself. This happened one time before.
Kamau, you can do it. You're good enough. Don't be nervous. Welcome, Kathleen Hanna, to Politically Reactive. How you doing?
Hi, I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, my friend.
Look, everybody says that. Thanks for having me.
Right.
Whatever. Thanks for having me.
I'm very excited that you're here because we have a lot of things to talk about, but I think we should start with the hard stuff. Why are we such good friends?
I don't know. We never hang out, but it's like we see each other and then we're like, you and I together is awesome.
Yeah.
And then we're like, make a coffee date and then one of us breaks it. Yeah. We're both really busy. With comedy, me with, you know, saving the world.
Yeah. Yeah. That's us. Yeah, that's right.
So unless you guys just want to keep talking about your friendship, I would like to welcome Kathleen to the show and also say thank you for coming. And also, you got a new album coming out, right?
Yes, it's called Hit Reset, and it comes out July 8th.
How does it feel to be in a band like that, and La Tigra, and compared to a band like Bikini Kill that was so overtly political? I mean, like, what is the feeling on stage?
I'm less afraid. I mean, in Bikini Kill, it was like our shows were super, super violent, and we had no help, like no managers or people like that or publicists, and we played a lot of clubs that didn't have any security at all, and bowling alleys with like only one exit. And actually was just interviewed for a magazine by this guy who was at the show we played in West Virginia, and it was like in his basement.
Oh my god.
And I just remember being like, there's no fire door. But yeah, so I feel safer, I guess, at our shows. I feel happier. I feel like it's less heavy. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's still heavy in moments, and I still really love to hear, you know, young people say, oh, God, did I just say young people? Can you please take that off the Pro Tools and we'll come in there and do it?
We'll bleep it. We'll bleep it.
Yeah. That's, like, the worst curse word ever.
Well, I mean, you like you said, right now, the Bikini Kill was a much more, you had to deal with a much more violent concerts and a much more, as I heard you saying, overtly political music. And right now we are, this is my segue, in an overtly political time. So do you ever feel like you'd want to go back to that kind of band, or do you feel like this, you can do what you want to do through the Julie Ruin?
I feel like part of the reason why Bikini Kill existed was so that women could be in bands that did whatever and talked about our lives and talked about subjective stuff. And I also realized that, you know, in trying to talk about a lot of issues, it's better to go from a subjective point anyway, because you can't universalize everything, as I've learned in my old age, because I don't speak for everybody. And I did a lot of talking in terms of we in songs and stuff like that. And now a lot of it is, you know, me, you, I, and they're about specific situations that could be read as also bigger situations. Like, I wrote kind of a funny song called Mr. So-and-So that's about tokenism in general. But I wrote it from the first person because I know I can be somebody else's Mr. So-and-So, tokenizing them. But I also got to say all this stuff about being asked to play the festival a week and a day before it happens. Like, you're always the last person asked, like, oh, we don't have any women, or like in our case, you don't have any gay people. And like, oh, they'll check off two boxes. Let's invite them. But we don't have any funding left, so we'll give them like half of what everybody else is getting. And, you know, we'll put them on the dumpster stage and spell their name wrong.
Yeah, I remember getting invited a week before Sasquatch started for $500 and no hotel. Isn't everybody getting that deal? I'm assuming every... What? You have a hotel? What?
So you, as we said in our intro, are credited with being one of the inventors, founders, progenitor... That's a word I can't use.
Progenitor?
Yeah, there you go. Of third wave feminism.
Yes, I was pregnant for a really long time, and then I birthed a baby called third wave feminism. I think I was a part of it. I wouldn't say I was like, you know, I don't know how big of a part of it was. I was pretty much in the punk rock music scene, and it was more like, and I came from like working at a domestic violence shelter and like doing rape relief phones and, you know, reading some feminist books and then getting really into it off campus, because we didn't have a great women's studies program at Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington, which everybody thinks we did, but it was like, yeah, it was like two classes. And
which was two more classes than, you know, most other programs in the country, right?
No, exactly. And but I took those, and then me and my friends started like, we were photographers, and so we started meeting by ourselves and like talking about all this great feminist art that was coming out of New York. And it was also, you know, definitely during the age of AIDS. So we were talking about public art and how you can be political in your art. And every time we brought stuff like that into school, we were just torn apart. And, you know, we were also, I realized on the side, you know, we were running a feminist art gallery, and we were talking about like, you know, oh, this guy followed me down the alley and I wrap a razor blade in a matchbook thing to carry in my pocket. And I was just like, wait, why is this not in our artwork? Like, why is this thing of like, you know, guys pulling over and asking us for directions, and then you find out they're masturbating, and then they pull away, and then the next guy pulls up and you're like, I'm not walking over to your car. And they're like, you fucking bitch. And it's like, these were all the issues we started talking about. And it wasn't even like we were like, it wasn't even, it just was natural that we started talking about it. And we started reading feminist books and articles together and sharing them. And then, you know, I think it was some Time magazine article came out that said feminism doesn't exist, or we're post-feminist society. Like, Ally McBeal is the new cool, like, 90-pound white woman who, like, you know, stands for us all. And I just was, like, getting into music, and I started to be like, how do I mix these two things together so that I can go around the country and later around the world and like be like, look, feminism, don't listen to people saying we live in a post-feminist society. We don't. Like, me and my friends live in a small town, and we're creating like a feminist situation there for ourselves and our friends and other people. And like, you can do it too in your town. Like, that was a lot of what we were trying to do.
For people who don't know the waves of feminism, do you think you could briefly describe the differences between the different waves?
Without offending people who think they know more, a lot more about this
I
than you
know.
Do.
I know. That's so, it's like, I wish I had like my feminist history books here. Well, it's hard because a lot of people believe there's been like hundreds and hundreds of waves of feminism, like, you know, going back to like before BC or whatever. I mean, to BC. And that there's always been like patriarchal kind of takeovers, and then like there's always been goddess societies, and there's always been all these other things. But in America, I think the way that people pretty much think about it is like getting the vote, which was like Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony selling out Frederick Douglass, as we all know.
Hold up, wait a minute.
Okay, so I laughed, because Kathleen said, as everybody knows, and I was like, well, I like to be everybody, but I really didn't know what I was laughing at. So I got to be honest with you. So I looked it up. So apparently, Frederick Douglass and Susan B. Anthony were really good friends, but they had one of the first public battles of who has it worse, black men or white women. That battle has existed publicly to this day. You may remember it from 2008, Barack Obama versus Hillary Clinton. But I think what Kathleen was referring to when she said Susan B. Anthony sold out Frederick Douglass was this dude, George Francis Train. See, Train is credited with swaying Democrats to women's suffrage, even though Train didn't actually think black men should get the vote. Train said, and I quote, "Women first, Negro last is my program, yet I'm willing that intelligence should be the test, although some men have more brains in their hands than others in their heads." Apparently, that got a big laugh. George Francis Train, like Jeff Dunham, minus the puppets.
And then with the second wave in the 70s, people think of Gloria Steinem, Bella Abzug, the 60s anti-war movement and stuff. There were situations that happened where women felt like they were left out of the conversations. And so splinter groups started happening, you know, in the Black Power movement. There were lots of things happening as a result of great things like the anti-war movement and the Black Power movement. I think when bands break up, it's always great because maybe two or three new great bands are going to start. And I feel the same way about political groups, is that, you know, when people are like, well, my needs aren't being met by this, so they can break off and use what they've learned to start another group. And that doesn't mean that it has to be like antithetical or hateful towards the group that they left at all. I think that's the way history a lot of times wants to put people in opposition to each other.
I mean, is it strange for you coming from like the political background that you come from, like, you know, having radical politics and creating radical art? Is it weird then to like follow a presidential election? Because I've always had that struggle as somebody who like is more interested in the bigger issues and is more interested in the effects, you know, of legislation or policies on people. That's more interesting to me than, generally speaking, than elections, because that just feels like political sports. And I can talk sports, but, you know, if I can actually get...
Wait, what sport can you talk?
I could talk... Did you know I was a huge sports fan?
No.
Yeah, yeah. It really obsessed a lot of my fans.
But wait, what kind of sports?
I like basketball, baseball, tennis. I watch a little football, hockey.
Football?
Less. Yeah, I know.
I used to have season tickets to the Capitals.
What? Really?
Yeah, when I was a kid.
Wait, the Washington Capitals?
Yeah.
What?
I like to see the fighting. I was 9 and I was like, get him!
Is it just seeing men fight like on skates?
I mean, yeah. Kathleen, yeah. You know, there's a sport where you can actually just watch fighting that you don't have
oh,
to.
Oh, yeah, it's called boxing.
Yeah, without all the boring hockey around it.
Yeah.
Right. But the blades on the feet, Kamau, the potential.
I know.
So is it strange for you to like have like radical politics and all of a sudden have to follow like an election, a mainstream presidential election? Does it feel strange or does it feel a little boring or are you in it? Are you sucked
into
it?
No, I'm totally sucked into it. Yeah. I mean, I find it fascinating because I don't follow sport. So like I do follow this kind of stuff more, but it's like, I've always looked a lot towards culture because one thing I learned in my days working with domestic violence survivors and talking about changing legislation for victims of domestic violence and rape is that if the judges don't believe, like you can pass legislation saying it's a 5-year minimum. If you're like, you've done this 3 times, you've been caught beating your wife up or your girlfriend or whatever, or your partner 3 times, and it's completely legitimate and you've gotten the restraining order and you keep going over the restraining order, we can actually put you in jail for 5 years. It's either 5 years or nothing. They'll give them nothing because the culture hasn't changed enough where people are willing to enforce it. And we see that in like that, you know, Brock Turner case where it's like, if people...
The Stanford swimmer who committed rape and was let off because...
He raped an unconscious woman behind a dumpster.
Yeah.
And...
there were witnesses. Apparently, there were even texts later that kind of implicated it too. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of people lied and said, like, he had no history with drugs and alcohol. And it came out later that was total crap. And they gave him 6 months, which is going to probably translate to 3 months. Mm-hmm. So... A lot of people have come out being like, oh, that was so wrong. That was so bad after the fact. And it's amazing that this is being talked about. But the fact that it even happened is so super nuts to me, but I'm digressing. I forgot what we were talking about.
No, I mean, I think it's important. I feel like, because, like, again, these are, like, issues that are important. We're talking about day-to-day things, cultural things.
Yeah.
How do we shift conversation? But also, you know, in this presidential election, there is the first, like, serious female candidate for president.
Well, the first serious female candidate for president for the second time.
Yeah.
Right. About to win the nomination. And certainly there's been a lot of push, like, from Gloria Steinem and Madeleine Albright saying that as a feminist, as a woman, you have to support Hillary Clinton. Which, you know, if you disagree with some of her policies or views, does that hold? Do you feel like that? Like, it's your obligation to
It's people's obligation to vote for whoever they want. It's like, I don't know. I think that's part of what I was saying about Bikini Kill being really didactic and, you know, out there so that later I didn't have to be and I could be whoever I wanted. I didn't have to stay within that framework of, like, all I can sing about is, you know, basically taking, like, stuff I was reading by, you know, bell hooks or Barbara Christensen and, like, turning it into a song, or, you know what I mean? Taking, like, feminist scholars' work and turning, I know you're really good friends with bell hooks. I knew you were going to say.
It's true.
But we were turning a lot of feminist scholars' work into songs and also things that we had personally gone through and stuff like that. And it's like, but we're still people, you know what I mean? And It's like, I think that's one of the frustrating things for me right now. I'm, like, doing a lot of press for our record and it's like, you know, I never get asked about my songwriting thing. And I've been, like, writing songs for 25 years. I have, like, tons of records out. And it's like, ask me about my lyrics. Ask me about my process. Ask me about, you know, like, whatever. Like, I want to get asked about that stuff too.
Right.
But I also like talking about politics. So I'm good with both of them. But I don't think that I should have to vote for a certain person or do anything just because of, you know, my gender. I think that's ridiculous. I hadn't heard that they had said that. I know Gloria made some unfortunate comment about women only going with Bernie because that's where the boys were at.
Yeah.
Hold up, wait a minute.
Okay, so this is the Gloria Steinem clip that Kathleen was talking about.
It's kind of not fair to measure most women by the standard of most men because they're going to get more activist as they grow older. And when you're young, you're thinking, you know, where are the boys? The boys are with Bernie or, you know...
So, Hari, what do you think about that clip?
I would rather you tell me what you think of the clip.
I don't think I want to do that, Hari. I think you should tell me what you think about one of America's leading feminist voices said. I think you should critique her.
Well, first of all, I don't think I, as a man, have the right to critique Gloria Steinem in this public space. And secondly, I am already imagining the hashtag campaign that starts when I do critique her. So no, I'm not going to do that.
Wait a minute, I've already got it. Hashtag Hari Kondo mansplainer.
Ugh, God, why did you give them that?
Are we allowed to mansplain mansplaining?
Huh. I don't know. What happens if we mansplain mansplaining? Does that mean we're like the ultimate mansplainers or the ultimate feminists? Oh, no, men can't be the ultimate feminist.
Oh, God. Hashtag Hari Kondo mansplainer rises again.
Oh, no. I just mansplained, mansplained, mansplaining. Mansplained, mansplaining.
Oh, man.
And I was like, that is super unfortunate. I hope she was wasted. like, because that's so saying that women don't have agency.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like a lot of this stuff is when you, with like people like Gloria Steinem, and just taking it off her for a second, it's like eventually everybody gets old. And we talked about this a little bit earlier where you talk about how we refer to people as young people or the kids. And eventually, you can't be cool enough to defeat being old. Like, sort of like suddenly like not being in touch and in step with. And I think sometimes it's amazing when there are old people who still stay in touch and step. And I'm not trying to in any way, you know, it's just, and I feel like a little bit that's
the ageist.
Yeah. I feel like of all the ists, that's the one I'm most comfortable being. Like, I don't want to be racist or sexist or homophobic ist, but ageist, I feel like, no, eventually we all get old. Eventually a song comes on the radio that you're like, huh. Is that what we call music now? And that's the point at which I feel like the moment you do that, you should just like, oh, my opinion's probably not valid about a lot of stuff now.
You know, you have to know what you don't know.
Yeah, you're telling me I was over the hill at 19?
Exactly, yes, yes. Hurry, you've been 40, you're so excited to be 49 years old someday, and I can't wait till you get there.
That's my ideal age.
Yeah.
It's the new 12.
I mean, I feel like my mom is one of the coolest people on the planet, and sometimes she gets upset about stuff. I'm like, that's not for you. It's okay. It's, you know, I mean, it's just because, and I feel like that's the same thing with this, with the Hillary thing, is that it feels like it's breaking down around generations of women is what it feels like.
I mean, what do you...
I'm voting for Hillary.
You are voting for Hillary.
Yeah. And why? I'm not voting for Trump. That's like...
Right.
For sure.
Right.
I mean... I really like what Sanders did. I really like that he brought the conversation more to the left. I don't think that Elizabeth Warren would be looking like she just came from the Hillary Clinton slumber party.
Right, right.
In matching outfits with her on stage. Like, they seriously looked like they were going to, like, dry hump. It was, like, it was true. It was great. Oh, I mean, I was loving it. I was like, this is amazing. And I actually went to these early kind of, like, move-on parties and stuff where they were trying to get her to run.
Yeah.
And I remember I got really disillusioned because they were trying to start a petition to get run, Warren, run. And I was like, she said no. No means no.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, she said she doesn't want to. And I'm like, this is really weird. This is supposed to be this political thing, but they're telling this woman they want her to go for this job she doesn't want.
Yeah.
Like,
it's funny when the whole Daily Show host thing, where they're trying to find the new host. People were like, how come Jessica Williams doesn't get it? Jessica Williams should get this. And then she ended up tweeting that, like, it's really nice that you're all doing this, but I don't, you know. It's
I don't want it.
I don't want it.
Yeah.
And I have the – basically she was saying that, like, I have the right to do what I want to do and do the things I want to do with my life. Like, it was very I don't know. It was and then, like, it's obvious, but at the same time, it's like, holy crap. Like,
and then out of that, some woman wrote a thing about basically Jessica needing – I don't know if she literally used these words, but needing to lean into her power. And that's when Jessica did the thing where she cracked her knuckles and went all in on, like, who the hell do you think you are? Like, and I think a lot of the feminism stuff, and we've talked about around this a little bit, does break down around white woman feminism versus women of color feminism.
Yeah.
And a lot of people,
whether you want to call it womanism or like whatever, I think the thing that needs to happen is, like, people need to get together and listen to each other and be accountable for mistakes of the past, even when they weren't your own. Mm. You know what I mean? It's like I benefit from white privilege, even though, like, I don't have a slave at home. You know what I mean? It's like, and that whole thing of, like, well, that wasn't me. That was, like, the generation and generation and generation and generation back. And it's like, I think that having accountability, having, like, the reconciliation stuff that they did in South Africa, like, basing some kind of activist work on that, which was predominantly really successful. And it's like, I think that, you know, someone like Beyonce coming out and saying she's a feminist and doing all this stuff that's educating people about Black power, or just, like, saying, yes, I agree.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you know
what
I mean? Like, not just educating people, but I do think she has young fans who learn a lot, who are like, wait, what's that about? I know some of it. I'm going to ask my parents, or I'm going to go on the internet and I'm going to read about this. And, I think those are really good things, and that's one of the really big things about this new, I guess, fourth wave of feminism, is that one of the big, at the moment, conversations is feminist now commercialized, fetishized, capitalized to this way? Like, is it too cool? But my personal take on it is, like, you know, I lived in a small town or small towns a lot of my life, and, like, I wouldn't have heard of feminism if it wasn't for something like now, like if I saw Beyonce on the VMAs like 2 years ago or whatever, and I probably would have been like, whoa, you know what I mean? Right. Like, what's that? And it's like, I don't get the thing of saying that it's so commercial, because, like, we still have these rapes, like this Brock Turner stuff. We still have, like, you know, a presidential candidate. And this is what scares me, is that, like, so many people voted for Trump. And it scares me that I'm in the grocery store with these people. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, there's a house up in New Jersey we just drove past that has, like, tons of Trump signs. And I'm just, I don't even understand, you know? And it's like, it just scares me. It scares me that these are my neighbors, and that they could let somebody be so racist, so overtly racist. Mm. His whole immigration thing, like, I'm going to build a wall? I mean, I know you guys talk about this all the time, so it's super boring. But
No.
He's an absurd candidate. Like, everything about him is always going to be interesting.
No, I mean, the whole thing of, like, Hillary Clinton went to pee during a thing and came back late.
What happened to her? I'm watching the debate, and she disappeared. Where did she go? Where did she go? I know where she went. It's disgusting. I don't want to talk about it.
And he's like, that's disgusting? Women urinating, so we should all just hold it for our whole lives, which would be very short because our bladders would explode.
Right,
like,
right.
What? He like talks about women's ugly faces and calls Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas. It's so deep and hideous. His wife claims that he raped her in her book. His ex-wife.
His first wife, Ivana.
Ivana.
Hold up. Wait a minute.
Okay, let's stop for a second. It wasn't actually Ivana Trump's book. It was a book from 1993 called Lost Tycoon, The Many Lives of Donald J. Trump. Yeah, I fell asleep in the middle of that title, too. Anyway, the book was written by Harry Hurt III. Sounds like a Donald Trump alias, but anyway. The book quotes from a deposition that Ivana gave during her and Trump's divorce, in which she reports on a sexual encounter they had as a rape. But then later, through Donald Trump's lawyers, she did say she did not mean rape in the quote-unquote criminal sense. And we're talking about Hillary's emails?
No one's, like, bringing that up over and over again. Why? That's, like, totally pretty relevant to me to have, like, a rapist president.
Yes.
I mean, not like we haven't ever had one, for sure.
Right.
Hashtag Jefferson.
I know.
I mean, I remember when, obviously, this was years ago, Bill Clinton smoking weed was a controversy. Barack doing cocaine, mentioning in the book there was some controversy. This candidate has been accused, I think, several times, but in particular by his ex-wife, of rape. Where is that story?
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, she has since apparently retracted that story. Now, that doesn't mean it didn't happen. It doesn't mean, you know, I just.
Sorry.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'll let your laugh be all the rebuttal we need. So,
like, yeah.
But, I guess, so here's my question about, I mean, obviously, do you think Trump could win?
Yes. I do. And that's what is terrifying to me, because so many things happen, like, at the last minute. You know what I mean? Where it's like, all of a sudden, you know, people were saying, like, Hillary Clinton murdering babies and, like, all this different stuff. And it's like, I just feel like some weird thing could come out at the last minute that just, like, you know, and I do worry that, you know, people like me who are interested in what Bernie Sanders had to say, and, you know, coming from a much more progressive left viewpoint, that those people will feel, including myself, but I've already decided I want to vote for Hillary, will feel alienated and just be like, sit it out. Hmm. And, you know, we gotta all participate.
I really
feel strongly, like, I cry when I vote, because I'm like, man, my great-grandmother wasn't able to do this. You know what I mean? Like, this is a privilege that we have in our country, and it's really important to me, you know?
If Hillary picks Elizabeth Warren as a running mate, like, could they win?
I have no idea. It's really weird, because I was talking about that song with tokenism, and I was thinking about that. I was like, oh, it's like they need a token white male. Like, to be the vice president. And they should ask him at the last minute and be like, you're not really going to be able to do anything or say anything. You just have to, like, sit there and, like, shake your head while I talk.
We'll give you $500.
I know.
To be the running mate.
No hotel room.
You can
room.
Stay at KOAs all across the country while you're doing your lecture.
Well, I mean, I felt like that's what Barack did with Joe Biden. Was like, you know, because at the time they were like, maybe Hillary should be his VP, or maybe nobody fingered Joe Biden as being the VP nominee. There was lots more exciting choices, like Latino nominees and women, and it ended up being Joe Biden. And it felt like, I mean, Joe Biden, obviously, we all know he's a Uncle Joe, lot good time, but it felt like
a token
white guy.
But he was also pretty bad in the Anita Hill
Yes, yes. That's, and he also, at that point, I was also at the time remembering the fact that he had called Barack Obama clean and articulate because at one point Joe Biden was a candidate and he was talking about how that's why Obama was doing so well. He was clean and articulate.
I mean, you got the first sort of mainstream African-American who is articulate and bright and clean and nice-looking guy. I mean, that's a storybook, man. Yeah.
And so for me, I was like,
like the whole assumption that like you're black, so you're not.
Yeah, that's special. Right. That makes
dirty.
You special. Yeah,
like,
that,
what?
This guy actually showers and learned how to speak the king's English. So we're actually doing good with this guy.
Racism so fucked up that even though he said that, he still got to be vice president.
Yes,
right.
For the guy he said it about.
Yeah, yeah. And so I mean, I felt like Joe Biden was a token white guy. And I also don't know that...
I think Hillary might need one, but I sure do hope that she picks Elizabeth Warren. Because, I mean, just watching that one, engagement that they had last night or the night before or something was, like, pretty incredible. The way that Warren got people fired up and their whole rapport together was so amazing. And I was like, I don't know. It felt exciting. And it didn't feel like... I feel like if she picked Elizabeth Warren, it's not really the right decision. Like, if she wants to be president in this one way, but because I'm not sure the world is ready for a two-woman ticket. I have to be honest. Like, I'm ready for it, but I don't know if I would like her to have some kind of power or to be the head of the Department of Treasury or whoever is overlooking like what's going on with big banks, what's going on with like trading and the stock market. Like, I feel like that's where her major talent lies.
Yeah, I feel like it's a little bit like Batman making Superman his Robin. Hey, wait a minute. I can do more than this.
Right.
I mean, it just feels like Elizabeth Warren, she's so amazing in the Senate. She holds people accountable. She, is very vocal. And I just worry that as the vice president, could she do that? And also, it seems very strange in one way that Hillary would pick somebody who is very critical of her views as her running mate. Historically, I mean, that's one big reason why Sanders wouldn't have made sense. It's like...
Yeah, there was too much. I mean...
Too much said. And do you really think if she supports something economically that he doesn't support, that he's going to stay quiet? And I wonder the same about Elizabeth Warren. Like, will she stay quiet when Hillary is proposing legislation that she does not agree with? Because that doesn't feel like Elizabeth Warren.
No. But that's why I think she'd make a great vice president, because I think she'd actually do something.
Right.
And I think, I don't know that much about like what the vice president is allowed
to do.
That's
the thing. The vice president doesn't actually have.
I'm so confused about it.
Yeah, the vice president doesn't have a lot of power. I mean, Joe Biden's power is in speaking his mind, not in making policy. Like, Joe Biden was able to go, I'm with marriage equality. And then Barack goes, God damn it, I guess I am too now. Like, that. And that's why I feel like Elizabeth Warren, that's not a job I think, nobody. That's not a job she would want, probably. And also, here's my, just to sort of segue into something else. Like, Donald Trump has already accused of Hillary, just by virtue of the fact that she's a woman running for president, for playing the woman card. Not that she, as if she chose to be a woman running for president. She just chose to run for president, but now because she's a woman. I mean, what are your thoughts about that, first of all? And also about, if the thing you're saying about, too, if Elizabeth Warren runs, it's the choice maybe that's better for the... that we would all like as maybe lefties and liberals, but it's not necessarily a good choice to win the presidency. Is that because I feel like that would really make the playing the woman card thing be an issue or be an issue for people to land on who didn't like the ticket?
I just want people to talk about the woman card. Like the woman card, it's like, okay, you get to probably be raped at least once in your lifetime, maybe twice. You get to have like male violence visited upon your doorstep like zillions of times, whether it's like a crying, tearful friend or your mom admitting something that happened to her in high school. It's like you get to get paid less than men for the same amount of work. Thanks for the woman card. Thanks a lot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like exactly the opposite. Ugh. It's just like when people talk about reverse racism or reverse sexism, it doesn't exist and it's not real. And it's just like a figment of like people's reality, people's imaginations as a way to like be defensive.
Right.
You know, and it's like, I want to talk about the man card. I want to talk about the rich white man card, like, and how far that's propelled Trump. You know, and like the creepy stuff with his daughter.
Oh.
Like nobody even cares. I think people are so seriously feel like they're going to barf that they just can't talk about it.
I don't think Ivanka would do that inside the magazine, although she does have a very nice figure. I've said that if Ivanka weren't my daughter, perhaps I'd be dating her. You know?
Stop it. Oh, it's so weird.
The beautiful girl. She's a beautiful girl.
Nice impersonation. Have you been working on that all morning?
Yeah, all morning. That's a beautiful girl. That's
you're the new number one Trump impersonator.
It sounds just like my voice, but it's in fact Donald Trump.
Well, Kathleen,
thanks for having me. It's super fun.
Yeah, we have to let you go. Yeah, thanks for coming by. We really appreciate it. So that was Kathleen Hanna, your friend.
Yes, my friend.
What did we learn today?
I think we learned that if you were a woman, you don't have to vote for Hillary Clinton, but you could vote for Hillary Clinton.
Did we not know that?
I have a feeling we did know that, okay. Actually. Okay. Especially the could, since women have been allowed to vote for quite some time now. Well, I learned that Kathleen Hanna doesn't always agree with Gloria Steinem, and that's okay. I also learned that Kathleen Hanna deals with tokenism like we do.
Yes. I learned that Harish should stop negotiating his own prices for gigs and let his agents and managers do it.
Yeah, that's probably right. And I learned that Kathleen Hanna and I have to hang out more and not just on the podcast, because we're great friends.
Are you?
Yeah.
Are you?
She agreed to do the podcast. How else am I going to get Kathleen Hanna to do the podcast?
Okay, sure. Well, that's going to do it for today's show. You can expect a new episode every week through the election. And in fact, you remember last week when we released two episodes? Well, we're going to do that on super special weeks like next week, so be on the lookout. If you haven't done so, hit that subscribe button on whatever you're using to listen to our podcast. And, you know, maybe think about leaving us a nice little review. It's a super helpful way to help spread the word about shows like ours. And if you really like supporting me and Hari, then support some of our other projects. Hari has a new album out soon on Kill Rock Stars called Mainstream American Comic. You can pre-order it right now at killrockstars.com. And I've got two other podcasts. One, Denzel Washington is the Greatest Actor of All Time, period. And also, I've got a live radio show and podcast called Come Out Right Now. And you can catch that live if you're in the Bay Area next Thursday, July 14th at 7 p.m. West Coast time. Or again, listen to it on a podcast place. Politically Reactive is a production of First Look Media and distributed by Panoply. The team includes Nick Bornstein, Lisa Leingang, Erica Mu, and Max Jacobs. The show is engineered by Ted Muldoon. Thanks to Kathleen Hanna, whose new album, Hit Reset, from her band The Julie Ruin, is out July 8th from Hardly Art. Go pick it up right now. And thanks to Northgate Studios in Berkeley and Argo Studios in New York. And thanks to Brontez Purnell for providing the music for the show. Oh, and also, keep talking about us on Twitter. Just use the hashtag PoliticallyReactive. I'm W. Kamau Bell. Hari already left.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii.